Good morning. It is a little after 9 o'clock. We are gathered in the 12th floor of the State Capitol for an informal hearing on case number PU-18-72. My name is Julie Fedorchak. I'm joined by Randy Christman and Sherry Haugenhoffert. So we have a quorum of the commission. This is an informal hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we'll close the informal hearing and issue a notice of hearing. I don't have any opening comments in this one. It's except to say I hope that we're able to wrap this up fairly soon and bring this case to a close. I think there's been a lot of work done by the company, by our staff on this. When this first came up a couple years ago, it was sort of on the early side of this whole issue of the final GIS files matching the pre-hearing files and the line that was permitted. And I think we've worked through some various ways to approach this. And so I think we're just better informed and better equipped with some tools to deal with this now. So I look forward to our discussion today. I've gone through all the materials in my file, the September filing, and then there was a November of like 21, I think, or 20, then November, and then last spring, and now again this year. So there's a lot of back and forth in this case, and looking forward to hearing both from the company and from our staff, and hoping that we're getting close to being able to resolve this and put it to bed. So with that, Commissioner Christman, any opening comments?
I have nothing else to add.
Sherry?
Nothing.
You met everybody?
No.
Oh, all right. Well, we will go around the table and introduce everyone for the record, and then we'll get on with the business. So let's introduce everyone, and then we'll go to the applicant who goes first. So, Pat, do you want to start?
Sure. Patrick Fawn with Commission Staff.
Darren?
Darren Snow with Marathon Petroleum Logistics. This one is Endeavor Field Services, predecessor to Soro High Plains. So the company has changed names, but the people and the players have stayed the same.
Okay.
Good morning, Commissioner Lawrence Bender with Frederickson and Byron. Met you up in Beulah for the first time. I was wearing jeans then. You probably don't recognize me with the tie. But
You sat to my left.
Yeah. Yep. Good to see you again.
Likewise.
Victor Sharp with Commission Staff.
Josh with Commission Staff as well.
Awesome. I think that was the first time I saw Lawrence in jeans, too.
And I think you said you'll be seeing me soon.
Yeah. And more of me than you probably want to see.
I said, no. I wasn't going to say that.
Lawrence works on quite a few projects that we work on. So, and I missed Lawrence in jeans.
I know.
Of all things.
I had to do a double take. I saw him from behind. I thought, that looks like Lawrence Bender. Jeans and a leather jacket. Not sure about that. All right. So I think that we'll go ahead and move it over to you two, whoever wants to kick it off, and then you'll probably run most of the show this morning.
Sure. Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Commission. I had kind of some prepared remarks, but Madam Chair, since you've covered a lot of the things, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. Probably just to briefly talk about the fact that this matter originally came before the commission back in 2018. It was for the construction of a pipeline that consisted of three segments, a north segment, a south segment, and a transfer segment. That hearing went well. The commission entered an order. The line was constructed. And then after the line was constructed, the company filed an as-built maps with the commission, and therein is where things started. I won't say go wrong, but issues came up with respect to where the line was actually located. Initially, we met with the commission staff, and we made a determination, I think, based on that meeting, that there were really three areas where we had some problems, where we went outside the corridor, where we were crowded the corridor line, and the length of the line was quite extensive. So we submitted reroutes for those. They should have been done earlier. They weren't, but we submitted them at that time. and thought we were probably done at that point in time. Your third-party inspector then looked very closely at where the line was routed based on the shape files, compared that to the as-builts that were filed with the commission, and made some determinations that, and I don't know what basis they made it, if it was 1 foot off the center line or 2 feet off the center line, but they basically made a determination that the third-party inspector, that a large percentage of the pipeline was not exactly on the center line. And rather than filing reroutes for each one of those areas where we weren't exactly on the center line, what we opted to do was just file an application setting the corridor on the route line. So now this is probably the only pipeline in the state of North Dakota where the route is exactly on the center line of the corridor. What we've done here today, Madam Chair and Commissioners, is we've provided some background documents in this notebook that I've handed out to you, and Mr. Snow is going to walk through that, you know, for the benefit of the new commissioner, give a little bit of information as to where this line is located, what its purpose was, since you didn't have an opportunity to participate in 2018. Hopefully, that will be helpful, and then we'll walk through specifically why we're here today. So, unless there's any questions at this point in time, I'll turn it over to Darren and have him walk through the exhibits.
Okay. Any questions?
Nope.
All right.
Good.
All right. Go ahead, Darren.
All right. So. Just to kind of start at the basis of this, what is the purpose of this project? And really the purpose of this project was to build a Y-grade pipeline. So Y-grade is a mixed natural gas liquid that comes off the tailgate of gas plants. And so this project was to build a pipeline from the then Oasis Wild Basin gas plant, which is up north of Watford City, build it down to the south, tie into a current pipeline that was in crude service, and then to repurpose 42 miles of the 12-inch that was in crude service to put that into Y-grade service. And so that's why we're saying you have a north segment and a south segment. The middle segment was the 42 miles of the crude oil pipeline that we then changed service over into Y-grade. And then keep on going further south and to take it to our company-owned Belfield gas plant where we have a fractionator, which then we take that Y-grade and we fractionate it into propane, butane, and natural gasoline. And then the third segment of the project was to build four transfer lines, which were 4 6-inch lines, one of them for each product, one for propane, one butane, one natural gasoline, and one Y-grade. So take it from the fractionator over to a company-owned rail terminal in which we built a NGL loading rack so that we could load rail and ultimately ship out the propane, the butane, and the natural gasoline to market via rail. A very big need in the state to transport Y-grade or NGLs or fractionated products out of the state. If you look at a basin and the growing of a basin, you have to have crude outlet for crude, have to have gas outlet, and you have to have an NGL outlet. Any three of those, you know, legs on the stool, if you don't have, you aren't going to be able to grow a basin or be able to get all of the products out. I mean, obviously, most people talk about crude and gas that gets out of the basin, but you have to get the NGLs out so that we're not just flaring gas. Mm-hmm. So,
Darren, are you still using the rail to ship that today?
Yes. Yeah, and I mean, currently we are railing out propane and butane. A little bit of natural gasoline, a lot of that is being trucked into local markets and other areas. But yeah, we are railing out product. And then, so that is a little background on the project. And so it did consist of, you know, building the north segment. Okay, then we repurposed the center section. We built the south segment and then building the four transfer lines which tied our gas plant, our fractionator, into the rail terminal. All right. I mean, you know, moving on from there, in thinking about the whole process of building a pipeline and siting of a pipeline, and how does it actually get built in the field? In going out and building one, let me just step back just a touch and say, you know, in the past, we would typically send in maps of a route, and they were a PDF of a route, and we would say, here's where we're going to build it. And then afterwards, you would send in a as-built survey grade. Now, with us going to a detailed GIS shapefile of where we think the pipeline is going to go when we are siting, one of the challenges that we as a company and as a industry have is really how do we guarantee that we have everything already engineered, already done, spend all that money prior to having siting. It's a little bit of challenge because we wait until we've done a lot of the cultural surveys, the avoidance and exclusion areas, which dictate a lot of where we route the pipe. But also, generally, you know, we will get out there and you will run into something that you may find. You may be crossing a landowner and you may run into, you know, something that was not necessarily cut, or a landowner may want it over here versus over there. And so in this case, in this project, there were three areas that did deviate from what I would call the route. And what I mean by the route is generally within the approved corridor, not necessarily down to the exact foot, but okay, if I'm within this corridor, okay. So there were three areas. All of the work was done, the cultural was done, there were no avoidance and exclusion areas. Should have been filed with that as part of the project, but it was not. Yeah, since then, like Lauren stated, they were submitted. And then going back and looking at trying to marry up a shape file of a as-built, which is truly where the pipe is, versus a shape file of where we thought it was going to go, that's where we found that there was, you know, a lot of things were off 5-10 feet, but still within the corridor.
Darren? So
I'll just pause there for questions.
I don't want to get ahead of you, but you've mentioned a couple times three locations. And if I'm looking at the certification that you provided on April 12th of 2021, April 12th of 2021, I think is when the certification came with the larger route adjustments. I only see two listed and addressed in that. And then I thought that those were the two that you sort of said, these are the big ones, and then a lot of the other ones are these smaller. So,
yeah, let me look through that.
Is that a docket?
It's docket 88, which you also referenced in your most recent filing of November 19th of 2021. Wait, yeah.
I might be able to help
okay.
on this. There was another certification dated August 6th of 2021.
Okay.
Yeah, Commissioner, I'm not positive of this. I'm looking at it quickly, but if you look at that August 6th, 2021 letter, which is under tab 3, page 2, you'll see it talks about Exhibit 1 being one certification, Exhibit 2 being another certification, and then I believe Exhibit 3 being a third certification. That's looking at it very quickly. I believe that's
okay.
What we're talking about.
All right. Then your November 19th filing from 2021, which I feel like is the company's intention to kind of wrap it all together.
Yeah, the November 19, 2021 filing would be to take care of everything that was not in alignment, that wasn't covered by the three certifications. Oh. Because to try to do a certification for each one of those alignments that was, you know, 1 foot off the center line or 2 feet or 7 feet would have been a mountain of documents to file. So we opted this route, which in some respects we think is better, Commissioner, because, you know, everybody got notice that we were doing this, had an opportunity to request a hearing. There were no requests, and now we're here today. If we had done it the certification route, none of that would have been required.
Yeah, I support that approach. I just want to make sure that when I read this yesterday and tried to kind of make sure all the pieces were covered, it looked to me like in your November 19th filing, you referenced what you provided in this.
In this April
12th filing, a certification that included the two big, but I don't and you specifically mentioned docket 88. I don't see that you referenced the other one, so maybe we just need to go back and make sure, or just whatever we do in the end, make sure we include all of them, all the certifications that need to be referenced in addition to the final.
Maybe we can clean that up in the order.
Sure. Anyway, and I might have missed something too. So, all right, sorry, Darren.
Yeah. Then just as we were talking. After going through and looking at the various shape files and trying to lay them one on top of the other and seeing if you're outside of that, the company then went back to our third-party environmental company that we had contracted with, had them take both shape files, look at those shape files, and go back and look and to make sure there were no avoidance or exclusion areas that were impacted, make sure that we did not, cross any wetlands that were not called out, things like that. Also had our right-of-way group go in and look to make sure that there were not any easements that we were outside of or anything like that. All of those studies and reviews came back that there were no avoidance areas, no exclusion areas, and that all easements were current. I'll pause there for questions. Do we want to go through each of those?
I don't think that's necessary. I think you've identified it, so maybe you can just jump to the next.
Pat, do you have a question?
Maybe I have a. This might be the right time for a question that I have, and that is, in your application, the November 19th application. You know, you've map the route as built, and then you have a 200-foot corridor centered on the route. And the question I have is, in your, you know, studies of this new corridor, did you do field studies or did you do desktop studies?
So I had them go back and look at the field studies that were done. Mm-hmm. And look at that versus the actual route and the width of what we would have used for the construction of that.
So you reviewed the field surveys done for the original application or the designated corridor at that time?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. So then my concern is about the new corridor. There are locations where the new corridor extends beyond the previously designated corridor, and I'm wondering about the studies in the new. So, for example, I did this on, you know, the GIS software, and you can see. You can see the red line is the route as built. And the yellow, the green, the dark green is the new corridor. And the yellow is the designated corridor. And so the, some of the green, some of the dark green is covered by the yellow. So that part is was studied, but with field studies. But I'm wondering about the green that extends beyond the previously designated corridor. What are the studies that are done on that part?
Yeah, on these ones, I think I'd have to go back and pull up what was actually done in the field, because in most cases, I won't say all cases, when they're out walking, they're doing more than what, say it's a 200 foot, but yeah, I'd have to overlay this, you know, with that.
Yeah, this is just one of the spots that, for example.
Is there a way to, does the company need a 200 foot corridor? I mean, could you just, could we write the order in a way that says, you know, 200 feet or the distance to the original, you know, the surveyed mount or whatever it is, just again recognizing that I'm guessing the pipeline is in the ground and you guys aren't interested in doing more studies on it, so just can we accommodate the studies that have already exist with language in that order to correctly designate a corridor that fits within whatever has been studied? I just throw that out as an option of adjusting, you know, unless you want the 200 foot corridor, if there, and I don't know how many areas are like this that goes outside.
I don't, from a company standpoint, I think you could narrow down the corridor. I mean, the pipe's in the ground, it's not moving, not going anywhere, so.
The only challenge I could see with that is down the road, if you were to want to build within that corridor, you'd have to build in the, whatever the corridor is designated, or else do studies on the other part. So you'd say on this one, you wouldn't be able to, assuming this is north, you could build on the west or east side, west side of the pipe, but not the east. So I guess that's the one restriction I would see that would come to play for the company if you didn't, you know, get 200 feet on each side of the existing pipeline as it's re-identified.
I have a question. What is the farthest distance from the approved route to one of your deviations outside the approval?
So of the...
I don't know that we were ever provided that, Commissioner. If you take a look at, I think it's tab 2. Page 2, first full paragraph on page 2 of that letter, it describes the deviations, approximately 2,000 so many feet. You know, it's 22 miles, 116,000 feet, and you know, only 268 feet were in the on the route. But we don't know, when they say on the route and not on the route, we don't know if we're 1 foot off, 10 feet off. I don't think we were ever provided that information. And that's one of the reasons we decided to make the application the way we did. Perhaps the third-party inspector provided that information to Mr. Fahn, but I don't believe it was ever provided to us.
Well, actually, it wasn't the third-party inspector that compared the routes. It was, that's work that I did.
It was who?
It was work that I did.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that the... I don't know if you need an explanation of the 268 feet, but that happens. That is 268 feet of the route, I figured, was the amount that was right on the route that was designated. Okay. Otherwise, everything was different from the route.
But to answer the commissioner's question, we don't know if we were 1 foot off, 10 feet off, 30 feet off. Is that your understanding?
I do have a... I made a filing in this case. It's docketed as number 95. And that one shows all the locations where the deviation from the designated route exceeded 20 feet. And so there's, I mean, there are, let's see, two or three pages of that, of
locations. Sherry, where were you going with this question? Did you have something that it was leading to?
I guess my concern was if those three deviations noticed, what is the actual length? You know, is it more than the 200 feet which was approved? Or that was my concern, is that we were, you were looking at it, Commissioner. What I heard is kind of put the order to fit the pipeline that was approved. And my concern is those three deviations were quite lengthy from the approved route, and no one's put a distance to that. So that is my concern.
And I'm addressing the question, Commissioner, but I mean, in those situations where we filed the certificate for a route change, those were situations, as I mentioned earlier, where we were outside the corridor, mm-hmm. or we were very, very close to the corridor line and probably outside. In these other situations, it's my understanding, please correct me if I'm wrong, Pat, in all these other situations, we were never outside the corridor. We may have been, as you indicated, 20 feet off the line or whatever, but not outside the corridor.
That is correct. The list that I had here showed the pipe that, you know, that deviated more than 20 feet or more from the designated road. And so they would still be within the designated corridor.
Does that help?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the there's really two buckets. The ones that you're deviating outside, which you've asked for approval for.
Yeah, and we've received approval.
Yeah, we already provided approval for those. And then the rest of these, which are within, so the question remains right now, how to deal with a new corridor. And I propose that to make this move quickly, we come up with language that says a 200-foot corridor. I mean, Jack, you might have better legal language, a 200-foot corridor, or less, based on the distance approved by the original studies or something to that effect, so we can move forward.
Excuse me.
Go ahead, Pat.
Well, I think what you're thinking about is that you want to leave the corridor that's already been designated.
Yeah.
You're not adding anything new to the beyond the designated corridor.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
A way to do that may be very consistent with what you've been doing recently as a result of, you know, the accuracy of the shape files that are being filed and the accuracy of the as-builts, is we propose an order that basically allows there to be some tolerance on the line. And we find out what we need and we work that into the order. Then it'll be very consistent with what you're doing on new pipelines, where somebody comes in and says, you know, we got a 50-foot corridor and we want a 10-foot tolerance on that center line. And if I can get the information that Mr. Fawn has, perhaps that's the way to write this order. Then the corridor will stay as it is, but the pipeline will be allowed to deviate. It won't have to be directly on the center line. Is that, do you think that might accomplish what you're...
Except for we already have, I mean, in this one,
we already have the location of the pipe now.
So we might as well just do it as it's...
Yeah, but you could still have an order saying you have the location of the pipe, but it's allowed to have a tolerance, the tolerance being where it is.
How does that address the corridor, Lawrence?
The corridor would stay where it is.
Okay, because
right,
I think the issue more is the corridor, not the actual how we designate the pipe, because we kind of know where that is. So to me, the question is, how do we most accurately address the corridor? And maybe it is just leave it the way it is, rather than say that it's 200 feet on either side of the new route, which would then extend beyond the surveyed areas. But it's just where the corridor used to be. The route, the pipe is within the corridor in all of those locations. We've confirmed that. And here's the new route.
But it doesn't address this example, though.
It
would.
Does. Yeah.
Because we would be saying, we would be saying the corridor stays as it was designated before,
the corridor which would be stay the yellow. This yellow.
It would
what
not.
What this does is takes it outside of what's been studied. This yellow area was studied. So if we say this corridor stays, it's just the yellow, and that's okay. Already been studied and approved.
Right. Yeah.
It would avoid the need to go back and walk the line and do all those things, but still accomplish what I think my client wants to accomplish, and that's leave the line where it is.
Right.
The only thing that I would need to do would be to double check, make sure that that everything else is within the corridor. The whole rest of the line needs to be within that existing corridor.
But we've already done that. I mean, you've identified all of the areas in that certification, this letter, the September 25th, 2020 letter, right?
I would like to double check it, but I think that is correct.
Okay.
And we can work that out with the company.
So I have two things. One is, there's a reason why there's a route and a corridor, but part of it, long-term, that the company likes is the corridor leaves them room to come in and build something new in there then, mm-hmm. without going through the process. But also, I think way before that law was implemented, my concept of the point of the corridor was the fact that, yes, you're going to have a pipeline here on the route, but in the process of putting it in the ground, you're going to have activity and disruption of those acreage. And someday if there are erosion issues or something like that, either as part of the reclamation from the pipeline or years later, nothing to do with it even happening, but they need to come in and work on it. They have some room to again disrupt. And so I guess my question is, in areas, if we just change that the route is in the old corridor and some of these areas, it got buried right near the very edge of the corridor, is there land then that was disrupted in the development phase, or that may need to be disrupted if maintenance work needs to be done that then is outside of the corridor?
Well, there's a million different scenarios that we could address here. I think we need to look at the big picture and weigh the pros and the cons and the reality that, this pipe is, we're here because of technology allowing us to see specifically where this was. And I think we somehow need to recognize that we don't have that accuracy on a lot of other pipelines. It isn't, and so how do we deal with it in a reasonable manner here?
And that leads to my other point, which, and I don't know if Pat or Endeavor has any more response to that, but the other point I wanted to make is this. Just for perspective, it's a question for Patrick, but someone else may want to respond to. When we talk about perspective and people listen to us and, things are pointing out, it could be 1 foot or 2 feet. I don't think we'd be sitting here today dealing with issues of 1 feet or two feet. But when I look through whatever the number of what Patrick prepared, those 3 pages, I didn't count them, but there must be 50 different places where it's 20 feet or more. And so I just don't want the public or anyone to sit and think that this is all about deviations of a couple feet. It's 20 and plus is in dozens of places. So I just wanted to provide that perspective.
Yeah.
While others in the room, in case I'm reading it wrong, incorrectly.
And we have to balance that with the direction we've gotten from the legislature on, footprint, reprint, once the corridor is approved, the companies can come in and put something completely in it without ever having to permit. So this whole notion of a specific route to me, doesn't seem to be really strongly enforced in the law.
But it does seem like the work needs to be done within the corridor, though.
For sure. So, and I think, you know, the biggest concern I have is are these three or two, I thought it was two, but three that went outside, which we've already addressed. Those were the big issues of concern.
Well, those are the areas where the pipe is outside of the corridor.
Right.
But if the pipe is 95 feet from the route or 99 feet from the route or something, then I would say it's pretty safe to assume work was done. Mm-hmm. And if maintenance needs to will need to be done again outside of that corridor.
So do you have thoughts on how you want to handle that?
I don't know what to do about it. You're right. This is something new that technology has developed for us. Part of me thinks technology should be working on the developer and contractor's behalf, too, that when they come in and lay something out, there's a 200-foot corridor there, and they're saying the route is going to be in the middle, or sometimes they tell us, well, in this area it's going to be offset from the middle. But I don't know, why are they 100 feet different?
One thing that may be helpful, I know, Mr. Snow, you did discuss that the field studies may be extended beyond what currently is within that listed corridor. If we could get a late file exhibit and know how far those field studies extended another 20 feet, I think that would help this discussion. Sure. Probably greatly. So if we could get some additional information on that after the informal, that'd be good.
I think in answer to your question, I think Pat already said he would like to take another look at the maps, the GIS, and see where the actual line was built, if it's right on the corridor, like Commissioner Christman is saying. How many of those do we have?
I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
That would work. Pat, how long do you think it would take you to go through and do that work?
I'm sorry, I was
analyzing how many spots are at the edge of the corridor.
Outside the corridor? Or
the pipe.
Just inside.
Yeah, yeah.
That wouldn't take that long.
Okay, and then we could match that with the company's work on figuring out if there's any extra tolerance that was provided in your field studies outside the corridor.
In fact, the company has both they have the same GIS as I do.
Mm-hmm.
They have the as-built and the corridor designated, and they have the designated route on GIS. So we can compare notes.
What we'd have to do is compare the as-built to the original corridor.
Yes.
Okay. Is that something that the computer can just automatically flag all the areas where it goes outside of that?
Not my computer. Maybe I have a dumb computer, but mine can't do that.
Yeah, I don't know if ours can or not.
You should be able to provide a general ID on that GIS map, though.
Yes.
Feet-wise.
I can provide township range sections.
Where,
let's say it's within 20 feet of the edge of the corridor, the designated corridor. I can do that.
And what tolerance would Commission like to see from that edge? I mean, how that to be flagged?
Randy?
And then, Madam Chair, hypothetically, if I'm just going to make up some numbers here, but if 95% of it is like within 35 feet, just use 35 feet either side of the center line, if we have a couple that are, you know, it's a 200-foot corridor, so if one is 95 feet, perhaps we just do a certification for that or something like that, if there aren't very many.
Sure, that would work, too.
Rather than trying to go through this.
Because you've already certified that the one-mile corridor didn't have any exclusion or void series in it.
Right.
So then that means that everything closer wouldn't either, so that would work as well.
Except those are, you're talking about the 1 mile study area. Those are desktop studies. They're not field surveys.
They've still certified that there's no exclusion or avoidance areas, so.
Well, okay.
I mean, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was, and I mean, I actually certified that, but previous to that, I went back to our third-party environmental group and said, look, you need to tell me on this route and within this study range that there's no avoidance or exclusion areas because they're the experts in doing that, and they did.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess it's up to you how you prefer to do it. How do you prefer to do it? And you can talk about that and get back to us if you'd like. But
well, maybe we could regroup after the after this hearing and come up with a proposal and share it with Mr. Fawn, and he can relay that to you, and you can get back to us with how you prefer
okay.
to do it, if that makes sense, or to Jack. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think my question is going to get down to, you know, what sort of buffer, whether, what do we want 20 foot next to the edge of the corridor? Because as we all are thinking about this, we have to think about the accuracy as well of these. Because as GIS data, you can have varying degrees of accuracy of the data and how you're capturing it versus getting down to accuracy within a foot,
yeah.
accuracy within 3 or 4 feet. But I mean, that's just a challenge for all of us as we move forward with the more and more data that we have. We just have to understand what that data is.
And I feel we have to keep in mind the big picture of what we're trying to accomplish here. And exclusion avoidance areas are a huge part of it. And landowners are a huge part of it. What accommodating their desires on their land. And so, you know, those are, in my mind, the big picture issues that the reason why we have siting to begin with. And so let's keep that in mind as we deal with addressing, you know, the more finite details of this route and the corridor that is established, and making sure that we're allowing for the protection of those big issues while also giving the company what it needs and finalizing this order. Okay, is there any other issues? Pat, are you comfortable with you working on the, you know, the as-builds, how it relates to the corridor, and coming up with a company, a method for either providing some tolerance or certifications if they're too close, that type of thing?
I think I understand, you know, where it's going. We will have to decide how close you want to be to the edge of the corridor, whether you want to do certifications for those.
Right.
Once we know that distance,
yeah.
then all those locations can be identified pretty easily.
Plus how much work we did out there, how much wider than the corridor do we actually inspect. I know, Madam Chair, you indicated a mile, but we actually walked it as well, and I think Mr. Snow suggested that we may have walked a greater distance than
sure.
200 feet, so we'll look into that as well. So,
Pat, when you made this list, there's lots of, I suppose it was kind of arbitrary that you marked as being more than 20 feet. Did it seem like a lot of those were like 20 to 30 or 30 to 40, or does more than 20 oftentimes mean more like, you know, 75 to 100?
More like 20 to 50, 20 to 40, 20 to 50 than 75 to 100, for example.
I don't know what kind of thoughts the company has on what's needed as far as maintenance. Because landowners ought to know where the corridor is, too. If they're planning on developing something or doing something different with their land, they kind of need to know about what might get disrupted if something ever needs to be worked on there. And so when I think of a 200-foot corridor, I'm just throwing this out kind of arbitrarily, I guess, but it seems to me 50 feet on either side of the middle, so 100 feet of that sort of would seem like almost the route to me, kind of, you know, that, yeah, you're not going to be within 1 feet or 2 feet or probably even 5 feet or something, but once, it seems like out of a 200-foot corridor, so 100 feet on each side, if you start getting more than out of the middle half of that, then you're starting to cut it toward the edge, and if you're able to be out there, I guess it's 75 to 100 feet away from that middle and do it without crossing the corridor line, then why did you need a 200-foot corridor in the first place if you can thread the needle that tightly with your equipment? So I just throw that out as a potential number and wonder what the company thinks as well as staff.
Well, and I mean, looking at it from a landowner standpoint, yes, I totally agree that the landowners need to know where the corridor is, but generally when we're out talking to landowners, I would say that they are probably more interested in where the easement sits rather than the corridor, because our easements generally preclude, you know, building structures over the pipeline. But outside of that easement, we have no say in, you know, what landowners do. So at least when I've been out talking to landowners, I don't think I've ever been asked where the corridor is. It's really rather show me where the easement is, and I want the easement here because I may have plans to do something over there.
How much does the easement specify? How much land is included as the easement, in the easement?
They all vary. Or, well, not all of them vary, but, you know, they actually can vary on width. And they can also vary on temporary workspace. Just when you're out.
What's the minimum that you would accept as an easement?
Well, the minimums, some of them are very neck down. It is what we call them, where you neck the down to, say, like a 25-foot easement, permanent easement.
Mm-hmm.
But then for maintenance or when you're building the pipeline, you may be able to go to 50. So you've got 25 feet on each side so that you could get a truck in next to it and or an excavator or whatever.
But you would never go lower than 25 feet?
Not unless you're forced to.
Yeah.
You know, some of the federal agencies will neck you down to a 12, 15 feet permanent just because they want to, you know, get pipelines very close to each other, which becomes challenging when there's maintenance, you know, when you're right next to each other. Generally from our company standpoint, we like to keep it at 50. That really does give you 25 feet on each side that you could bring in some sort of an excavator or something next to it.
And I just want to say, yeah, I get that most of the landowners, the concept of our corridor, right, is not something they'd even think of asking. But we're here to protect them whether they know of the issue or not. And it's just a personal experience. And it's a unsighted, it's a water line. It has nothing to do with this agency, but a line on my property, and I want to build something there now. I kind of wish I had one time had to build it somewhere else. And there's a pond, and I'm sort of threading a needle in there, and I'm thinking about, okay, if they have to work on that ever, are they going to disrupt what I want to build? Not like, could I, or, you know, is it within their easement, or it definitely is not, but I just want to make sure that what I build doesn't wrecked later when they have to come and work on the water line something.
Right.
And so to me, that's part of why we have this corridor, so that we're making sure that in public hearings and stuff, people kind of have a concept of what where activity could occur and where, you know, if we extend this corridor too far out, however far we extend the corridor, like I said, then you can come build something there without coming to us in a public hearing and the landowner.
But they'd still need an easement from the landowner.
Extending the easement.
Regardless of whether we give
them any public
corridor.
Hearing
yep.
or anything like that.
And maybe this will be helpful. I'll explain what we did on DAPL, and I'll explain what we're doing on Summit right now. We go out and take an easement, and that easement will say, we're going to have a pipeline that's going to cross your property diagonally through the northeast quarter of a particular section. And we may attach a sketch that will show generally where that is. But in the easement itself, we indicate that after the pipeline is in the ground, we're going to file or record an as-built drawing, and our easement will be 50 feet with the pipeline on the center. Not that much different than what we asked for here. Now, I understand we got some statutory issues that might affect what we're doing here, but that's how that is solved, Commissioner, in terms of the landowner knows exactly where that easement is because there's an as-built drawing, and the easement gives us the right to have that pipeline right in the middle of that easement. And it will be because the easement is finalized after the pipe is in the ground. Does that help?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So you suggested 50 feet. The company suggested 25 feet. Well, you didn't really suggest it, but you said that it sounds like the standard easement is about 50 feet, so that's 25 feet on each side. So recognizing that easement language is kind of what the landowners have agreed to. I personally would support on these areas where, and hopefully there's not that many of them, the pipe skirts the edge of the corridor, that we look for 25 feet on the edge of the pipe on each side. So that, you'd have to go 25 feet beyond what's been already approved in the corridor to accommodate that if you're just on the edge of the existing corridor. If the as-built is just on the edge of the existing corridor.
Yeah, the only thing I could think of on that is when we're out doing maintenance, let's say that there was a portion of the route gets to within, say, 15, 20 feet of the edge of the corridor. You could work from the other side, and still do maintenance. Now, where we like to have areas on both sides is generally so that we don't get boxed in, is what we typically call it, is that you have another pipe that comes in and lays right next to you, and then you're not able to work over that pipe. You can if you put down all kinds of mats and things like that, but, all of us would rather not work over, someone else's pipe. So I think as we go through this and we can work with Mr. Fawn on areas that are, say, within 25 foot of that corridor edge. And then we can also look and see if there was additional, field study that was walked out there. And if there's not, then I guess I would propose that we would have to look at it probably on a case by case. Would we come back and amend the corridor, or would we just stipulate to us that if there is any maintenance, has to be done within the corridor and not outside, so that a landowner would have that. And I think as a company, we would probably be open, to either just having to look at it. If there are pipelines sitting right next to you on one area, it may dictate or force you to look to go walk some more to make sure that there's room for maintenance. I don't know that without having doing the studies.
Pat?
From the company's perspective, if you're going to go out and do some maintenance, do you check the easement or do you check the corridor, the one that we've designated? It seems like maybe you just check the easement.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that, And there are, and you have a 25 feet on either side of the pipeline as your easement, then you're out there, you know, doing the maintenance, and you may be outside of the corridor if you're not checking the corridor as well. So it's safer probably to, in those instances where you don't have that 25 feet, to amend the corridor, you know, make sure the field studies have been done and amend the corridor.
Okay, well, I think, unless there's any, I think we kind of have a direction here. You guys will look at how much, what other distance outside of the existing corridor you did the surveys, and you guys will identify the areas where we snug up to the border of the corridor with the as-built, and then come up with a plan for addressing those. I would love to see this on the commission meeting on the 30th, if that's possible. I don't know if that is possible, but...
Before you retire.
Certainly give it a try.
All right. Very good.
So well, hopefully we won't have any more of these now that the commission has the policy of granting
right.
tolerance.
Yeah.
Hopefully this is the last time you have to, first and last time
yeah.
see something like this. So.
That would be great. Any other questions?
I do not.
No.
All right. Well, let's see. Well, there's some wrap-up things on this informal I need to cover. Okay. So is there any objection to the evidence of this audio recording? I don't think there were. Oh, and the few handouts that were passed out being part of the official record on which a decision will be made on this case?
No objection to me.
None. Jack? All right, then that's how we will handle that. I don't think there's... Pat?
I guess somebody mentioned that. Was the company going to do a proposed order for this application then? And then work with Jack on the final language?
I thought we were going to have a conversation to decide the direction we were going to go.
And then maybe you can decide on the proposed order after that.
Yeah, I don't, yeah. I'm not really told what direction we're going to go yet.
Sure.
To start working on an order, but... I mean, if we can maybe talk with you after this meeting to start the process
sure.
going
yeah.
so we can get this done.
Okay,
that would be great. So come up with a direction and then...
I'll do a proposed order.
Proposed order.
Yep.
This, oh yeah.
Is this part of the case or is it just...
Were we provided that electronically as well?
Sure, I can do that.
Okay, if you would, we'll just add that to the docket as well
sure.
for the record.
Yep. Good point, Randy. All right, so the binder of information provided by the company is also part of the record and will be added as a docket item. All right, are there any other matters for the record? All right, then this informal hearing is now closed. Thank you.
Thank you.